You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right. Welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'll be your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yo, Scott, this will be episode 481.
Woo!
All right, it's a good one. 481.
Are you sure about that?
481? I think so.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
Okay.
We'll see.
Awesome.
Awesome sauce. I don't know why I got this select on here for. I got some kind of weird thing on there. I don't know what that's all about. Anyway. So, you said you had something. A couple of somethings. I got a couple of somethings. I got a couple of books I was going to show you.
Yeah, I got a couple. I got a couple things. I've had this in my back pocket to talk about. I'm not sure when I got. I got this recently. Got it new. This is the most recent new comic I've got. It inside it says
wait,
March.
Newer than Clobbering Time?
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about Clobbering Time. You're right. No. I bought this before Clobbering Time. Did you see this or pick this up?
No and no.
Really?
I think you told me about it, though.
I didn't talk about it on the show, did I?
I don't think so. It's a reprint, though, right?
It is a reprint. So, this is it's labeled March. I don't know if that means that. I guess I probably got it in March. It's a reprint. It's called Avengers 2. It's called Avengers 2, Wonder Man and the Beast. I am a big Wonder Man fan.
I think you were telling me about it, but I don't think you talked about it on the podcast.
Okay. I'm a huge Wonder Man fan. And this collects it was called Avengers 2. This is, it collects a three-issue thing called Avengers 2, Wonder Man and Beast. And I think this came out in the 90s. Those are the original covers on the back.
I never saw those.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, I don't know exactly when it was. Let me see if it says
in the indica. I don't know how I missed that. I don't remember seeing it on the rack a couple months ago.
I bought the only copy my store had.
Okay.
Originally published in magazine form as Avengers 2, Wonder Man and Beast in 2000. So it's 23 years old.
But it's Roger Stern and Mark Bagley did it?
Roger Stern and Mark Bagley. I like Mark Bagley. I have a lot of Mark Bagley stuff recently since the pandemic. So when the pandemic happened, there were no comic shows. However, at one point during the pandemic, some guy came around here and rented a hotel meeting room and sold comics.
Yeah.
And I went to a couple. I know you went to a couple. We went to one or two together, and then I went to one. I think you and I went to one of them separately.
Yeah.
But at the time, I'd been listening to some YouTube channels, and this one guy was talking about how great the New Warriors was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd never read New Warriors, and so at that comic show, I bought a bunch of the early New Warriors.
Yeah.
Mark Bagley drew, I think, like the first 12 issues, maybe, or something like that. And I really liked his art. And I knew that he had done the Ultimate Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And so I picked up the Ultimate Spider, which I'd read, I think I got the first few in singles, but I picked up a hardcover that's like the first
12.
Is it 12?
I think so.
Anyway, whatever it is, maybe the first 12, probably.
I've got the first two hardcovers of that. I think it might be 10 and 10 or 12 and 12, something like that.
Yeah. It's kind of oversized slightly.
Yeah, it is.
I like that. His art kind of changes a little bit. Some of them I like better. I kind of like his earlier stuff better than this particular stuff. I like the New Warriors stuff a little bit better. This has a little bit slicker kind of look to it.
I don't like his costume in that.
You don't like whose costume?
Wonder Man. That's not
my this name. Is my least favorite Wonder Man costume by far.
Yeah.
By far. But I picked this up. Saw this on the rack. I haven't been buying a ton of new comics, and so anytime there's a new comic that I'm interested in, I'll pick one up because I want to support the industry and support the shops. The publishers, you know, who knows? They're kind of on their own. But I do want to support the industry and the shops. It has a brand new Nick Bradshaw cover. Actually, it's labeled 22 for some reason. This book is...
new. Well, it's because he drew it then.
Probably. Yeah, you're probably right about that. Nick Bradshaw is weird to me because I have a... Before he was a professional artist, when he was just doing, like, independent kind of stuff, he had a pretty active blog, and he posted tons of sketches. And he would get a sketchbook, and he would fill a page of, like, Avengers. It'd be all these different Avengers characters. And he might do new designs for him and stuff. I thought it was great. I don't care for this cover at all. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the coloring. Since he's become, like, Marvel's cover guy, I think he's trying to emulate Art Adams too much or something. I don't care for it. It may be the coloring. I don't know what it is.
I mean, if I drew that well personally, I would say, man, I'm awesome. But as far as buying something from a professional, that's not my cup of tea.
No, mine neither. Mine neither. And like I said, this really is my favorite example of Bagley art. But I never read this stuff, and I like the character. I like the Beast too. The Beast is one of my favorite characters, and I always like the two of them together. And so I picked this up, and it's got three issues, and it's a little bit different story. It's got Wonder Man, and he's basically, it's kind of an overview of what's happened to him. I hadn't read any of this stuff. I didn't know about him getting transformed into Ionic energy or whatever.
That's what he is, yeah.
Which is what he is. That's why his eyes are red. But I didn't know about him glowing and all this kind of stuff. The best Wonder Man was in the Red Safari Jacket Wonder Man, the Avengers era.
With his jet belt.
With his jet belt. And apparently now he can fly without a jet belt.
No kidding.
Yeah, which is kind of funny. But the first issue has kind of an overview of his history, which is kind of cool. And then it talks about the Beast. It's kind of an overview of his history.
So that issue is not just like,
here's what we're doing.
No, it's not like old issues from the past they've reprinted. It's stuff from the 2000s they've reprinted. But it's not issues inside of the original Avengers run.
No, this is
a separate thing.
This is this three-issue run.
Yeah.
And the first issue
and it's a complete story. It didn't go to number four, right? It just does one through.
Yeah, this is a complete story.
Okay. I got to find that.
And so they're on this plane, and they're going to L.A. And so one thing I thought was funny is Wonder Man has gray hair in here. I never realized he got gray hair.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right, does it?
No, I don't. Your mileage may vary. I don't think comic characters should age. No reason for them to. Whatever.
It depends.
Yeah, it does kind of depend. He could have... To me, this is my...
Well, since he's not really completely human anyway, why does he have to age?
Right. Yes, he's one of the strongest people in the world. On the level of Thor,
yeah.
Why would he age?
Exactly.
To me, if I was drawing Wonder Man as a comic, or writing it for that matter, I would be like, here's who Wonder Man is in my mind. Tom Selleck without a mustache with superpowers.
Not beefy enough.
Well, okay, I mean, not exactly Tom Selleck, but just kind of that personality, like Magna P.I., kind of, maybe in the face, kind of look like him, kind of wavy black hair like him, no mustache, obviously, wears glasses because his eyes glow, but that same kind of, you know, anyway, be that as it may. So they're on this plane, and of course, somebody decides to hijack the plane. Bad idea when you got two Avengers on the plane. Oh, by the way, the Beast is using his image inducer or whatever, so he looks like a normal human. I've never understood why the Beast wears glasses. That don't make any sense to me.
Oh, the little round ones?
Yeah, that's lame.
Yeah.
Because he didn't wear them, you know, he's the Beast now. And now in the comic, he's, I don't know, bald, looks like a monkey or something.
That's way past. He's not that way anymore, really.
Okay, does he look like this again?
Sort of, but he's beefier.
Okay, fair enough.
You know he's I won't tell you, never mind.
Yeah, don't tell me. I don't care.
It would spoil it for you.
Yeah, because I'm gonna go out and read the Avengers, or the X-Men. Anyway, so then, the issue two, is more of them fighting. I'm not going to go into the issues of the story. But they do go to L.A. And it's funny. There's a YouTube channel where the guy talks about different characters. And he'll go through their whole history. And he'll talk about, like, story arcs and go through their... Tell, like, oh, this happened this and go through it. It's actually kind of interesting. There's some pretty good YouTube stuff, like, out there like that. I forget the name of it or I'd plug it. But they go to L.A., talks to his agent. You know, he's like, hey, you know, I'm still trying to be an actor. He meets some girl that he was engaged with. Kind of find out, and he kind of dumped her. I was watching the thing. They don't tell it here, but in there, like, all the, he's like dating this girl and they're engaged. All of a sudden, he switches off to, like, start dating Scarlet Witch or something. Probably the whim of some writer. But in here, they just kind of wrap it up where it's like, she's like, oh, yeah, I'm married to this guy. You know, it's like, oh, okay. She's like, well, you know, I still like you, but this is my husband. It's like, okay. And they get into some hijinks. And there's plenty of house ads, by the way. they get into some hijinks. Then they fight, who's this guy? Is it the Grey Gargoyle? That's not the Grey Gargoyle. It is, who is that guy? Oh, is it the Stone Colossus? The Colossus. It's the Colossus, not Colossus. Anyway, they get into a fight. But anyway, it's a pretty good, I dug it. I know I kind of jumped over a lot of it. It came out in March. Cover price was $8. Now, last episode, I talked about My Hero Academia, which was probably at least 150 pages, and it was $9.99. Black and white, digest size. This is what you get, which for comics is pretty thick. You know, $7.99, what is that, like $2 or $3 over a regular comic? $2 over a regular comic?
No, regular comic would be $4. So it's like you're getting three, but you're only paying for two in that.
Yeah. So I felt it was a pretty good deal. And the art's pretty good. I think what I don't like is the coloring. Some of the color, I don't know.
I mean, from here it looks okay. It looks like...
Yeah, it's like early 20s Bagley art. Yeah. Or early 2000s. Bagley art.
If I saw it on the shelf, I'd pick it up. I never saw it.
Yeah, like I said, I bought the last one at my shop. I thought it was pretty cool. I liked it. I liked the art.
It's kind of weird they reprint that, though.
It is an odd choice.
I wonder why. It's not like the Beast and Wonder Man are hot characters right now.
They're not hot characters. I don't know what Wonder Man is doing nowadays in the comics. I know the Beast is doing mutant stuff on Krakatoa or wherever that storyline's at. If they're still doing that, but here's the thing. I read a thing that was saying that somebody at Marvel had said their market is nostalgia. I don't know if it was CB or somebody in marketing or what. Their market is nostalgia, and so I think that they're trying to tap into some of that. Because I've noticed they're re-releasing some of the Epics, which I know they're supposed to be in print all the time or whatever. They're releasing those mini Marvel, the digest size Masterworks, which are pretty cool. You know, they did this. I kind of wonder if they're kind of casting about trying to figure out what era audience... What era their current audience, such as it is, responds to?
You know what else they do?
What else do they do?
Well, they haven't done one this year, but they did plenty last year. They'll do those reprints that are like $1.
Oh, yeah, they do a lot of them, don't they?
They were. And then, but now this year what they're doing is they do these books, and they're called, what are they called? I forgot what they're actually called, but what they basically are is, they're facsimile editions. And so what they'll do is, like, I just picked one up. I picked up the Warlock.
Volume 1? Well, issue 1?
Yeah, well, no, it's like when he was in, like...
Is it this?
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is the omnibus.
Well, it's like that though. It's like Marvel Premiere, like something 178, I think. It's like the first Warlock, whatever.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, I forgot what number it is, but anyway, that doesn't really matter. The point is, instead of it being $1, it's $4. So it's not the same format as what they were doing, but literally, I bought it I wanted it, but as I was flipping through it when I got home, it's got like all the old ads in it too.
Oh, does it?
So when you're showing me that book that's got like all the house ads of all the Masterworks and stuff or whatever, this has all the little boxes of like Charles Atlas and X-ray vision glasses and even like the letter columns and stuff like that. It's a complete... The only thing different about it is it's on better paper and the price in the corners more, but pretty much the same thing though.
See, like this, I wish they'd have done that. That would have been pretty cool if it was three issues.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a whole lot different than, because that's, you know, from the 2000s, it's
going to be very
similar paper and ink versus that Warlock was from like, what, the mid 70s? So it's going to be quite a bit different, you know.
Yeah.
Well, is that you? Are you wrapped on that?
Yeah, I'm done with that.
I need to get a photo of that for later. But I brought something that I brought a book that you know, you talk about the Shadow, like the first sort of superhero in a way.
Yes.
Hulk for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
but. That got me thinking about reading the original superhero. So I picked up the Superman trade a while back. It's called Superman Red and Blue. Have you heard of this?
No.
So it's one of those deals where they've done numerous books like this. This Superman Red and Blue, the gist of it is all the stories in here, there's only red and blue. Because that's his colors are red and blue, basically. So the book is all reds and blues.
That's kind of weird looking.
They do a Wonder Woman one that's like black and gold, I think. They've done Elektra, red, white, and blood. They've done a Daredevil one. They've done... So both publishers have kind of... It's kind of the gimmick that both publishers are doing. The reason why I wanted this, though, is because... Not because of it's Superman... Not because it's red and blue. It's because of the creators in this. Now, this came out as a six-issue limited series. But they were oversized issues because each issue had 4 8-page stories, I believe. Or maybe it was 3 8-page stories. But either way, they're a little bit oversized issues. They weren't the 22-pagers. They each had, like I said, 3 or 4 8-page stories. But the creators in this are like some of today's top creators. So let's get on the list of some of these creators that are in here. Wes Craig, Stephen T. Siegel, Dan Panosian, Michael Feffé, Nick Spencer, James Stokoe, Mark Waid, Francis Manipal, Robert Vendetti, Judge Winnick, wow, he's got a story here. G. Willow Wilson, Mark Buckingham, Daniel Warren Johnson, Matt Wagner, Tom King, and there's some other ones too, but those are kind of the highlights. Artists, Steve Lieber, Wes Craig again, he wrote and drew one. Let's see here. Of course, Michael Feffé wrote and drew one. James Stokoe wrote and drew one. Francis Manipal, same. Coley Hamner. Ibrahim Mustafa. Valentine Delandro. Chris Sprouse. Mark Buckingham, of course. Daryl Ward Johnson wrote and drew it. Mac Wagner. Steve Pugh. Mike Norton. Bunch of colorists. So it's kind of like a who's who of current DC creators. They all got a chance to either write and draw their own story or... write an 8-pager and have a superstar artist do your story for you. That was a draw, but specifically, there's a few people in here that I really wanted to read their stories. So I ended up buying the book. I didn't buy the singles. I knew I was going to want this, so I just waited and and picked up the trade. There's six different covers, of course, one of which is a super sweet Paul Pope cover, which I did buy the single of that because I wanted that. But the stories in here, there's the Paul Pope cover right there. That's Superman, cool. Superman slugging a robot. The James Stokoe story, really cool. The Michael Fife story is in here. It's pretty cool if you like his work. I won't go into specifics of the stories necessarily, but the stories range from all the way back to where Superman's parents put him in the capsule and sent him to Earth. There's another story which has another capsule arrive, and you're thinking, oh, is this his cousin? No, it's not. When they open up the capsule, it's Krypto the Superdog pops out. There's stories involving Mr. Mixoplex. There's stories of Superman fighting robots. There's a lot of stories in here of Superman, of course, doing good deeds, but also teaching people the lessons his parents taught him. There's a few stories in here of when he's a young high schooler or junior higher, where Mom and Pa Kent are showing him, not only how to farm, but also how to be a good human being, basically, that kind of a thing. Some heartwarming type stories also. There's some Clark Kent stories that involve Lois Lane. There's one story here which is pretty sharp. I'll talk a little bit about it since it's kind of its own thing. It's called Metropolis Summertime. And it's a story about Clark Kent, and he goes into a little shop, and there's a girl working the counter, and like he asks for her parents or whatever, her dad, and her dad's out, so the dad left the girl to run the counter, and of course Superman or Clark Kent, he's dorking around, he's bumping and stuff and knocking things over because he's really clumsy and that kind of thing. They play that up, and while he's talking to the girl behind the counter, a young kid with a gun comes in and tries to rob the place, and Clark Kent kind of talks the kid down and gets the kid to hand him the gun, and the kid runs out or whatever. But the interesting thing about it is the artist draws Clark Kent to look like Christopher Reeve. And it looks like, it's a pretty good little Christopher Reeve in here. So, if you like Christopher Reeve, there's a good likeness on this particular story, which is kind of cool. And then the Mark Buckingham story is the story about, it's a kind of a rehash of Superman's mom and dad sending him to Earth, which is kind of a sharp story. The Daniel Warren Johnson story has Pa Kent going to a church and talking to the priest right after they found the baby and talking about how it's tough because now he's got a son and that kind of thing. And actually, this particular short story was up for an Eisner Award but did not win it. But it was up for an Eisner Award. And it's Daniel Warren Johnson written and drawn. It's really nice.
Whose is that? That one that...
This white one here?
Yeah, that one.
Sophie Campbell wrote and drew this one. So yeah, it's almost...
It stands out because it's all blue and it's just line. There's no real art. I mean...
It's blue line, but then there's a cat involved and the cat has red eyes and it's the super cat. What's the super cat's name?
Fluffy. It's not Sparky. Or maybe it is Sparky.
No, they call him the name.
It's here. Supergirl's cat. Streaky.
Streaky, thank you. You're right, it is Streaky.
I got that Supergirl.
Oh, that's right.
Dude, I like those goofy Supergirl stories by Jim Mooney are pretty cool.
Pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah, I can see like little kids going, this is cool. She's getting all kinds of hijinks, her and Streaky.
There's a Matt Wagner story in here where he wrote and drew it and his son Brendan colors it, which this 8-page story here.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even know it's by the same person that turned in the turd that Shadow Book was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is pretty good. You know, this is a typical Matt Wagner right here.
Yeah.
I don't know what was wrong with the Shadow Book. But anyways, if you're a fan of Superman, I guess what I got to say about this is it's got probably, I would say 24, something like that, stories in here. all about 8 pages long by a who's who's list of artists and writers. I dug it. I had a lot of fun reading it. If you're a Superman fan, I would recommend it. So it's called Superman Red and Blue. It's an anthology.
How old is this?
It came out last year, I think.
Oh, okay.
The issues came out in 21. I think the book came out into 22, maybe.
I'm anthology stories are kind of hit and miss,
obviously. Oh, there always are. They always are. I think there's more hits in there than misses, but there are a few misses in there, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I'm flipping through and there's a couple I'm like, okay. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're all...
Well, I mean, you'd have to read it to determine if the story's any good or not. You're just looking
at... I'm looking at the art.
You're looking at the art only. I mean, you can't really go by that.
I mean, sure, I can.
No, you can't. It's the whole package, man. I mean, you can have great art, and the story could really suck.
I can go by whatever I want to go by.
That's not a good indication of the story, though.
That'll indicate whether I'm going to buy it or not.
I mean, but is that make the story good or bad? To me, personally...
But you can't read it in the store.
To me, though...
What made you buy this?
Well, I told you what made me buy it. It has a who's who's list of creators. I wanted to check out their stuff.
Okay.
But you can have a good story with shitty art, but you cannot have, in my opinion, a good story with great art. I mean, a bad story with great art. The great art does not save, in my opinion, a bad story, a crappy story.
This is not great art.
That's Michael Fife. You don't like Michael Fife?
I don't like this.
That's Michael Fife.
I don't know him, so I can't say what
he does. A book called Copra. It's actually pretty good, but you'd have to, you know, if you don't... You're unfamiliar with Michael Fife, so I get it.
I don't care for that art either.
I don't care for that. Actually, though, that story, though, once again, the story's pretty good. That story there is about a guy that he's been interviewed because Superman has saved him numerous times. And the funny thing about it is, the first time Superman saves this guy was probably like in high school or something. And then later on, Superman saves him again and again and again and various things happen to this guy, and Superman keeps on saving him. Well, as the book goes on, as the story goes on, the guy gets older and older, and he's being interviewed when he's 60. And so Superman has literally saved this guy's life from various little things that have happened, like 5-6 times throughout his life. Well, this guy's aged, let's say, 40 years. Superman looks completely the same.
Right.
Which is fine, because he's from Krypton or whatever. And then he says, well, yeah, I saved Superman once. So, and he says, he's like, oh, Superman saved me 6 times. I've saved him once. And it shows like how he saved Superman. And at the very end, they end up saving each other. So he's like, at the very end, it's like the tally sheet is like, Superman saved me 7 times. I've saved him twice or whatever. But it's kind of
Did you catch up with him?
No.
Oh.
But it's kind of it's a pretty decent story. But yeah, the artwork is not my favorite in the book by far. It's funny you picked that out as like, I don't like this. The story's pretty decent, though. Like that Mr. Mixaplex story, don't care for it. There's some characters that in his rogues gallery or his villain gallery...
I don't care for Mixaplex.
I don't care for that character at all. And there's a few other ones I don't either. That, to me, is what makes Superman kind of a weaker character. His villains just are not there compared to some
guys. How does Superman have good villains, though? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You
All-Star Superman did it right, though.
You have to have...
They have to be smarter than
him. I mean, smart, magic, you know, strong.
Well, that's Mixaplex is magic.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's from another dimension, but yeah, he does his thing, but I just don't care for it. But, you know. I thought that book was pretty good. If you like anthologies, it's a pretty good book. If you like Superman, but...
Oh, yeah. I know that guy. It's
not for everybody. Who is it?
Rich Duick. Duick? I don't know how you say his name.
How do you spell it?
D-O-U-E-K.
He's the guy that was... The story's like the social media story or whatever?
Something like that. Some guy's on the top of the Daily Planet building with...
Oh, and he jumps. He basically jumps.
I think he falls.
He fakes it. And then, while he's doing it, he's recording, and he's like, and then it gets other people to also see if Superman will save them. Yeah, it's kind of hokey.
That's the problem with...
Superman?
Yeah.
Trying to save everybody?
Well...
Homelander doesn't do it.
Yeah, Homelander's liable to kill you.
Yeah, for sure.
More likely to save you. I like this art. That's the one you were saying was like the Christopher Reeve, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got decent light. It's not
the great, likeness is okay in spots. It like I don't know what's going on with his face.
Well,
there.
That's what I'm saying. It's not great, but it's you can tell who it's supposed to be for sure.
I wonder if some of these, if he's using, if he's tracing photos, because yeah. The likeness is better in some. That's better than that one. You know.
But you know who it's supposed to be, clearly. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely...
I'll tell you who that reminds me, that artwork kind of reminds me of, you're going to completely disagree, but Elvis, the coloring or just the look of it, kind of reminds me of what John Paul Leon does sometimes.
No, I agree. I kind of agree with that.
I mean, it's
not as good.
Although, you know...
Not as much dark.
One of the...
That's... I don't know what he's trying to do there.
Type of bowel movement.
But
one of the last pieces that John Paul Leon did before he passed away is one of the covers in there. The cover is represented in there.
Oh yeah,
he did one of the ones. One of the last things he did before he died. I think that's Daniel Warren Johnson in there.
Yeah,
yeah. Daniel Warren Johnson is a freaking beast. He's a superstar. And you saw the Stokoe story.
Yeah.
The Stokoe story was, it looked good. I didn't care much for the story that much, but.
See, to me, it's like, you know.
Is that a variant cover or something?
Well, it's a cover. I don't know if it's a variant or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to get off my couch and go to the store to buy that one. Now, the Paul Pope one's a different story. It's like, oh, I'll take that Paul Pope cover. It's just kind of amazing Paul Pope would even get involved in something like this.
He's a comic book guy.
Yeah, but... Hey, Paul, you want to do a picture of Superman punching a robot? Sure.
$3,000.
Exactly.
But, I mean, first off, how long did it take him? You know.
Probably a month.
Well, how much time did he put in working on it?
Probably a couple hours.
Right. I mean, I don't know what he does most of the time, because...
Who knows what he does? Is that mopping the floor? What was that?
Yes.
Was that the symbol for using the Swifter?
He's using the Swifter to clean his ceiling.
Shit.
He's mopping the floor.
I don't know what he's doing, but... He can turn out some good pages if he wants to. I mean, I would love to have more Paul Pope stuff come out, but
yeah,
it's not
the art on this Matt Wagner thing's pretty. I like this a lot.
This story's pretty decent. I mean, you know, he laid a turd on the shadow thing, but that's pretty decent.
Oh yeah, Paulo Rivera's a pretty good artist. His is pretty good too.
I'm telling you, the Francis Menopause in there. There's some good art.
Yeah,
in there.
There's a few I don't care for, but.
I think it's really more hits than misses.
Yeah, I can't disagree.
Art-wise. Yeah. Story-wise, it's still more hits than misses, but I'm not the biggest Superman fan, so that's kind of a one thing, too, to think about. But there's some pretty good stories in there, but they're not all great. But I think there is some good artwork in that book. But I don't think great artwork necessarily makes a good story. And I know you do. Yeah, I didn't get that. The last story I didn't get, but it wasn't for me.
Wait. Okay. In this story,
right,
Superman is telling people secret identity. Is that in canon?
No, I don't think so. No, that's more of a Spider-Man thing, right? Or an Iron Man thing. I don't think it's a Superman thing. First of all, none of this stuff's canon. This is a, you know what I mean? This is a anthology book with just stuff from all over the place in it. But that he does do that. It makes the kid want to share some stuff about himself. And it's the only story in the book that doesn't have the red and the blue. It's got different colors, so...
Okay.
I don't know why they included it, but it's there.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, I'm with you. If the theme is red and blue, why is it included? I don't know.
there's a cool variant I was going to show you here that I liked. Here it is, the Walter Simonson variant. I thought that was kind
of cool. Oh, yeah, I saw
that. And it says, like, after me, because he mimics the Thor cover. Yeah,
mimic the Thor.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's Superman Red and Blue. It's a trade. It's a trade. It's regular trade size, not oversized. It's regular trade size. The cover price on it was $24.99, but it is fairly thick. So, you know, if you can get a good deal on it, and you like Superman, I recommend it. If not, it's okay if you don't like Superman. But
there were, there was some pretty cool art in there, and there were some artists I hadn't seen in a while or whatever. I thought the Daniel Warren Johnson thing was pretty good.
Yeah, he's a superstar.
Who else? There was somebody else that I thought was pretty good.
Stoko.
No, it wasn't Stoko. I didn't care for that one. He is not...
Michael Fefe?
Yeah, it was Michael Fefe.
You don't like him?
I didn't care for his
own. Michael Fefe? Oh, it's Fefe or Fefe? I think it's Fefe. Yeah, so there you go.
I think it's Fefe. Fefe?
Yeah,
wasn't it F-I-F-E?
F-I-F-F-E. I think it's actually
Fefe.
I think it's Fefe, but whatever.
Probably is Fefe. Okay.
What do you got there, Chief?
Have you seen this?
I have no idea what this is.
Oh my gosh. I cannot believe you hadn't seen this. To me, this seems right up your alley.
You think this is something I should have in my library?
Maybe. So I have a book in my hand. It's a library book. I got it from the library.
Okay.
So at the very least, you should check it out. Do you ever check books out of the library?
Almost never.
See right there, that stack? That's part of my stack from the library. You know the library lets you check out 100 books?
That's a library? Dude, you got to get one of those carts just to carry that shit back.
Oh, it's insane. That won't fit in your
backpack.
It's insane. No, that's not going in the backpack.
Hell, there's some of those books are like reference only. How'd you get those books out of there?
Dude, that's why you carry a big backpack everywhere.
To steal them?
Yeah, how are you going to steal stuff without a big backpack?
There's three of those books are huge.
One of those books, let me talk about this library. I'll show you. I haven't read all these. I need to read all these.
I got my own shit to read. I don't have time to read that stuff.
Well, one of them is called Jazz Covers. Look how thick that book is. And it's record size, so there are jazz covers.
Oh, full size.
And some of them are full size. And I mean, I see the library.
But you wouldn't read that book.
What I need to do is take about like an hour and sit down and read through it.
Right.
So I wouldn't buy it. I mean, if I collected jazz records, I would. It's a cool book.
It's something Chrome needs in his library.
Do you have this?
Nah, I passed on that.
What I'm showing, Dave, is Watchmen Annotated. And I got it with the idea of I'm going to reread Watchmen because it's got all these notes.
Yeah.
But one, it's not a comfortable size to read.
It's an odd size book.
It's square. It's square.
Yeah.
Ish, you know.
It's almost like another record album.
Right. In fact, those two books are the exact same size. Proportions. Okay, so I got this book called For the Love of Vinyl, the album art of Hippogenosis, I think is, and Hippogenosis is the people that did all the Pink Floyd album covers. And it's the story of the company that did...
That Steve Miller Band album?
Probably. There's all kinds of stuff they've done. Anyway, this I did sit down and read. It just needs to go back. And the rest of these are just various books that I've checked out. Like I said, I got too many library books. I need to take some back before I go on vacation. For sure. But, you know, they don't charge you overdue fines anymore, so I don't know why I'd ever return a library book.
That's a COVID thing, right?
No. They started after COVID. Anyway, so I got this book from the library, and it's by Grady Hendrix. Grady Hendrix has written a book called Horror Store and a book called My Best Friend's Exorcism, both of which are like horror books.
Yeah, I think you brought his name up before.
I was thinking I have. I haven't talked about this book, have I? Uh-huh. I didn't think I had. The horror store is about a ghost or something ghost-like in a IKEA-type store. And my best friend's exorcism is a book that's takes place in the 80s. And there's these girls. It's very Stranger Things-ish. Girls are having a slumber party and they have like a... I forget what they do. I don't know if they do a Ouija board or what, but from then on, one of the kids is acting weird, and they think that they're possessed. Mm-hmm. That's actually been made into a movie. In fact, it's on Amazon Prime. I don't think it did very well. Anyway, but what this book is called Paperbacks from Hell, The Twisted History of 70s and 80s Horror Fiction. So it's kind of his, apparently he was a fan of, he must be about our age, because apparently, like, in the 70s, he was kind of a fan of some of this stuff. But he's researched it more after the fact. And so this is kind of a history of this.
Chapter 1, Satan, is what it said?
The chapters are broken up by, like, categories. So chapter 1's called Hell, Satan. And it's, like, Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist. And then it's all these other knockoffs called... To the Devil a Daughter, or the devil finds Work, but it focuses a lot on the plots and it kind of gives a little it talks about it like, well, this book, after this book hit big, all these knockoffs came on and that kind of stuff, and it talks about the different genres and it talks about the cover art
Is that one book called Satan Sleuth?
The Satan Sleuth. Yeah, it's about a guy that, like, fought evil.
Oh, my God.
You know. Let's see. What's the second chapter called? I don't think there's a table of contents. There may be. Hang on. Oh, yeah, there is. So, chapter 1's called Hail Satan. Chapter 2's called Creepy Kids. You know, it's books about creepy kids.
Yep.
Chapter 3, When Animals Attack. Of course, it's like nice. Cujo and different knockoffs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chapter 4, Real Estate Nightmares. You know, haunted houses, that sort of thing. Chapter 5 is Weird Science. 6 is Gothic and Romantic. 7 is Inhumanoids, which is kind of like just weird, like Creature from the Black Lagoon type creatures. The Animals Attack chapter, I think it has Jaws in it, too. I saw Jaws in here. But it's got little different categories within each of these. And the covers are great. What I really enjoyed about this, and I'm not a big horror guy, and I certainly wasn't in the 70s or 80s, but, man, this the style, the art style of the books and stuff, that reminds you so much of the book. I mean, my grandma read a lot. She didn't read horror books, but she read... just like, I don't know what 70s kind of books, but a lot of them had this same kind of cover. Just kind of, you know, but there's all kinds of crazy covers.
You know, remember when you used to go to the grocery store and they had the little aisle or the little section with all the paperbacks you could buy?
Yeah.
That kind of went away, unfortunately.
There's nothing like that in the grocery store. You know, I'm surprised like Crest doesn't have like a magazine rack.
Yeah, for sure.
You know. Walmart, when we go to Walmart, I always look at the magazine rack and the books to see if there's anything.
Yeah.
You know. Let's see. Then chapter 8 is Splatterpunk, Serial Killers, and Super Creeps. And that's the last one. But this is it's hard to go over a book like this. And I don't want to go through each chapter or whatever. I mean, I can't say I've read every single page of this. But I've certainly looked at every single page, and this is a pretty cool book. I don't know how hard it is to get or how much it goes for or whatever, but I would recommend getting it if you're interested in that era of horror books. You know, Stephen King was really big in this period, mm-hmm. and a lot of these are like Stephen King and Stephen King kind of knockoffs. I think he did a good job of like grouping different books, you know, that were like, you know, like medical trauma, you know, so there's all this different stuff that are similar.
Does he go into like these are his personal covers or just stuff he's got found elsewhere?
He doesn't
say where he got the pictures, I don't think. But it does talk about stuff he may have read or he was he talks about them kind of in a like historical context and then like a personal context where it's like, you know, well, for example, let me read this paragraph. I'm just flipping through and I found this. I have never discriminated against anyone based on the quality of their skin, so it was educational to read The Child's Ward by Patricia Wallace and Allison's Baby by Mike Stone and realize that, yes, in fact, all skeleton doctors are fabulously incompetent and should immediately be turned into xylophones. So basically, and these are two books, and he's got the covers up there. Both of them are different books, but they both have a cover with a skeleton dressed in medical garb holding either a small child or a baby. Actually, there's a third one over there with twins. But that must be a sequel to The Child's World. It's Twice Blessed. But so some of these he talks about reading. So I don't know if he's read all these. But
heck, I think I had that V.C. Andrews book.
Oh, yeah. V.C. Andrews was pretty popular.
Yeah.
But anyway, check out that interview with the vampire cover.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy looking. Oh, that's the first paperback edition. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's the first one. This is a 79 edition. That's kind of...
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the hardcover for Jaws. It didn't do very well on hardcover. You know, the paper... You've seen the paperback, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The paper, it did a lot better in the paperback.
Well, look, they screwed the pooch on the
Jaws. Yeah, the shark is so lame looking.
Yeah, for sure.
You know. And it has different things about some of the artists that do the covers. There's an emphasis on the covers, but he talks about the stories too. But anyway, I thought the book was really good. I enjoyed it. No idea what it goes for online. It may be out of print. It's a quirk book.
Quirk.
Which I'm unfamiliar with quirk as a publisher. Oh. But that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, for sure.
You know. I'm not up on my publishers. But anyway, but if that's your ballpark, if you like horror or 70s horror, I would 100% recommend that book.
That's cool looking.
Yeah.
I've got one last thing to talk about, and I'm not going to go into this very deep, but, you know, we talked about The Shadow a few weeks ago. We talked about how you really dig The Shadow's pulp character from the 30s and so and so and so and so. So I brought something. It's not Shadow, but it's kind of from the same, set in the same time period, and it's a book that I didn't think was ever going to happen. That DC tried to come up with this book a couple different times. They got so far into the series and then they quit publishing. They never collected it all. But it looks like it's going to finally happen. I've got in my hand right here the volume one of two. Two's not out yet. But I've got the Sandman Mystery Theater collected, the Companion Volume 1.
Oh, really?
And you never read this?
No.
So, the Sandman Mystery Theater, this Compendium Volume 1, just came out. It's been out maybe a couple weeks. Cover price on this is $59.99, so it's a $60 book, but it is 36 issues plus the annual. And I think altogether there were 70-something issues. So one more of these will complete the story. You know, for the longest time, we talked about getting stuff bound. This looked like this was never going to happen. I actually considered binding my singles. I'm glad I didn't, because I really didn't want to destroy them. And now I've got this Compendium Volume 1. Now, yeah, I would love this to be hardcover. Unfortunately, yeah,
that's kind of funny that it's a compendium, not an omnibus.
Yeah, unfortunately, DC, being the lame-ass cheap bastards they are, they didn't make this into an omnibus, because let me tell you, if this was an omnibus and it would have been twice the price, I still would have bought it. That's how much I really like this story. The Sandman is, it's not the Sandman, the Neil Gaiman Sandman. This is the Golden Age Sandman. Wesley Dodds, and he's the Sandman that has the fedora, and he wears the 30s suit and tie kind of a look, and he's got the gas gun, and he has visions or dreams, you might say, and that kind of moves him to where he needs to go to take care of situations. And along the way, he gets a girlfriend who becomes his kind of his Girl Friday, and her name is Diane, and they become pretty much inseparable. It takes place in 1938 in New York City, and him and his girlfriend are kind of like socialites. And it's kind of the story of these kind of well-to-do people in New York City by day, and then at night he fights crime as the Sandman. Not to be confused with that Neil Gaiman stuff. This is the classic. This is the good stuff, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I know tons of people would say, oh, no, the Gaiman stuff. I tried to read the Gaiman stuff. It didn't really stick with me. But this stuff here, this 30s Sandman, is really cool. You may not be the biggest Guy Davis fan. I'm a huge Guy Davis fan. The Maquis, I loved it. His work on BPRD. And then most of this 70 issues is Guy Davis art. So not all of it, but most of it is. I really dig it. The story's cool. It's Matt Wagner and Steven Seagal. Not Steven Seagal, the martial artist, but Steven Seagal. Wrote it. Highly recommend it. So happy this was collected finally. And I was wanting to reread it. I didn't really want to dig out all my singles.
Sure.
But now that I've got this compendium volume one, I'm probably going to read it. And then when volume two, hopefully eventually it will show, which knowing DC, if it ever comes out, it'll be at least a year. It won't be like
in the next month it came out.
Now, Marvel does that. Marvel drops books fairly quickly, but DC is so slow about stuff. But highly recommend it. Sandman Mystery Theater, Compendium Volume 1. For some stupid reason, at the top they put the Sandman Universe Classics at the top with the Sandman script.
Oh, yeah.
So lame. Marketing ploy. It also says DC Black Label on it. Another lame marketing ploy. Ford by Patton Oswalt, yet another lame marketing ploy, all on the cover of the book. You don't need that horse shit. It's classic Sandman.
That's a cool looking cover too. All that stuff detracts from it.
It's all unnecessary. You know. Now the Black Label, you could go, well, that's their new Vertigo or whatever, and it's mature themes, which this is very mature themes.
Okay.
This has got murder in it. There's a little bit of nudity in it. This isn't your typical kids.
But was that a Vertigo book when it came out?
Yeah, it was Vertigo, right here in the corner. They left it on.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Vertigo book. Yeah, so it's adult themes and that kind of thing. Drug use. There are serial killer type people in here. There's sexual situations in here. A little bit of nudity here and there. Not much. Not very much at all, really. Child abuse, things like that. The Sandman goes after these thugs and ne'er-do-wells in New York City in the 30s. I highly recommend it. Now, the art here is clearly not Guy Davis art, so I'm not really recommending that too much. But there is a good chunk of Guy Davis art in this book. Anyways, Sandman Mystery Theater by Wagner, Seagal, and Davis. Check it out. Expensive cover price, but you do get 36 issues plus an annual, which is a little bit bigger than a regular issue. So really,
surprisingly, not as heavy as you would think for that much stuff. Of course, it doesn't have a hardcover.
No, it doesn't. But you think about it, though. It's, like, say, 30.
Boy, that's a thick book to not be hardcover.
I know. I hope it doesn't break down. You figure it's like, well.
But it reminds me of, like, the Bone trade, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, It's not quite that thick and that unwieldy, but it's no. I mean, I know that this is some of your favorite stuff. I know you've said if you ever got a tattoo, it'd be the Sandman by Guy Davis.
Yeah, either that or the Marquee. I really like his work, and you know, when I met him, I was like, man, I'd like to get a Sandman. I'd like him to draw me a Sandman. I'd have a tattoo of it. I think it's a cool character, and I love the story. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like his work, but I'm not a huge fan of it. But I think it's good. It's good. You know, $60 cover, that's a lot of stuff for $60.
It's you know, you're going...
I mean, compare that to that Planet of the Apes book you talked about.
You're going about $2 an issue here.
Yeah.
The Planet of the Apes is about $9 an issue.
Right. And what was the other thing? What was the other thing we were figuring out? No, it was the Planet of the Apes. It was about 10 or 9 an issue.
Yeah, because it's 11 for 100, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a much better deal, even though it's not hardcover.
Not hardcover, but man, a lot of bang for your buck. It's not super wordy, but the story is... the cool thing about it is the story is kind of a continuing all the way through type of a deal. So it's a meaty read. Highly recommend.
Well, again, that goes back to what I think we were talking about a few weeks ago, the idea that comics used to be where they were like that. They were written as, I mean, it was episodic, but the good ones were written so that there was stuff going through it. There was a through plot of some sort.
Right.
And so it wasn't just like, here's four issues and then we're done. Here's four issues and then we're, you know, they weren't writing for the trade.
There was a situation in this book where it's bothersome. It's kind of bothersome. And so when I met Matt Wagner, I asked him about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm not going to get any specifics about what it's
sure,
about.
Sure, yeah.
But as the characters move along, the Sandman and his girlfriend, who ends up being sort of his assistant, sort of, in their personal life, not as their crime-fighting life, but as their personal life, their relationship moves on and that kind of thing. And then there's a situation that pops up, and it felt like a character turn that just didn't seem genuine. If you're reading the books all the way through,
yeah,
it just seemed like, and I was like, what's that all about? And you know, when I met him and I was talking to him about it, he didn't really have a good reason why. And so I was like,
oh, really?
No. And I was just like, because let's face it, we're talking about a golden age character. It doesn't really matter what they do with this character. They could kill this character off. They could kill his girlfriend off. They could have them both go to hell. They could have them
like Bill and Ted.
They could have them die in a firing plane crash. They could have them sink on a boat, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter because there's no continuity for this.
Yeah.
This is its own thing, right?
Yeah.
And it was a Vertigo story, so it didn't really matter.
Right.
It's not like his story would have crapped on all the great Sandman stories from before, because where were these stories at, right?
Right.
So it just seemed disingenuous, this little thing he put in it. I just was like, really? He didn't have a good reason for it. But that's the kind of thing you read this and you go, wow, that was something else. And this whole run is kind of something else. So highly recommend it. Sandman Mystery Theater Compendium Volume 1. It's out now. Pick it up. It's super cool. There you go. That's a recommendation.
There you go.
All right, so let's do this. We've went over an hour or at an hour. We're going to wrap this episode up right here. As always, I've been your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
You know, come back next week. Of course, I'm going to say this again and again and again and again and again. Check out our blog at betterthanfictionpodcast.blogspot.com. And definitely check it out because I'll have some photos of what we talked about. I always put the photos up there and a link right to the episode. So if you go, hey, I'm tired of iTunes, I'm tired of this or that, iTunes makes me want to... They always want me to check in and re-up this and re-up that. I'm sick of it. Skip that. Skip that nonsense. It's like skip the line. Go straight to our blog. Click on the link at the bottom of each episode description. Listen to our episode right there, and then you'll be a winner.
You're all winners in our book. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please take a second to leave a review on whatever method you're using to listen to it, iTunes, whatever, and leave a review and subscribe. This will help other people find the podcast. Also, if you're in the panhandle of Florida, in Pensacola, stop into Area 51 Comics, our sponsor on Navy Boulevard.
Thanks, Jim Bob.
Yes, Jim Bob.
Going to keep this going, man. And with that, we'll say, hey, come back next week for another all-new, awesome episode, and we'll see you then, and we're out. Peace out.